Just in case.
There's some up here. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Wow. Move up to the mic, I'm told. Wow. Hey, before I begin, I wanted to say a word of thanks to all of you, but especially to my friend Carl. He doesn't say a whole lot about himself, but many of you may realize tomorrow's his birthday. And I just wanted to recognize that and thank him. What? Anytime I have the opportunity to command a microphone on the podium, I should take advantage of it. So I think that I'm going to do that. Carl's been a great friend. He came and visited with us. He sat with us a lot of times. Came and prayed with me in the hospital while we were there. And he gives a lot of himself, his time and his energy for this church and for our body. And I just wanted to say happy birthday, Carl, and thank you for all that you do. So I'm going to ask you guys, would you like to sing happy birthday to Carl with me?
Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I'll start, as horrible as it may be, but I'll start.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Pastor Carl. Happy birthday to you.
I know, he will indeed. That's okay. That's okay, though. I can handle it. Thank you guys for everything that you've done. I kind of wanted to start just by saying thank you. For some of you guys, you know me, I have several family verses that I want our family to model. One of those is 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. It says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as, in fact, you are doing." That's something I want my family to model, that we build one another up and not tear each other down. And I wanted to say thank you to each one of you in this body, because that's exactly what you've done. You all are our church family. And you didn't even know it, but you were following one of our verses. So thank you very much for all that you've done. I know a lot of people have said, you know, gosh, I wish I could have done more. I feel like I have to be right up on this thing. I feel like I haven't done enough for you all. And I just want to say, the thing that you guys did for us in providing meals, providing childcare for us, was give us an opportunity to spend every moment that we possibly could with our daughter while we had her. And that's no small thing. It's huge. So you guys did a great deal for us, and I wanted to thank you very much for that. Thanks for being part of our family. So to begin with, Miranda was born on a Thursday night, and just to kind of take you through the steps of what happened that night, the labor and the actual birth went a lot smoother than normal, I think you would say, yes. Weird that it was so calm and so, you know, peaceful, but it really was. When she was born, she let out a scream, and that's what you want to hear. It was a beautiful thing. But then shortly afterwards, she stopped breathing. And I don't remember going to my knees. I don't remember if I was already on my knees or not, but I found myself on my knees, holding her and trying to get her to breathe again. And you know, I was just crying out to God. I was like, what is going on? I was confused. And I remember just sitting on my knees praying for her. God, please help this little child. We had to get into the ambulance and take her to the emergency room at Carroll County. And once I got to Carroll County, I was thinking, you know, she probably just aspirated some amniotic fluid, and we just have to get that fluid out, and she'll be fine, and everything will be okay, and we'll be able to go home. because I just wanted to be home with her. And I quickly realized at Carroll County that no, that wasn't going to happen. In fact, we had to get transferred to University of Maryland. And so they prepared everything and transferred her over there. The first couple of hours was very confusing, very difficult for us. And we got to University of Maryland. We had to wait several hours before we could see her. And once we saw her, we had to scrub up and put gowns on and everything. She was in the NICU there. And so there was our little girl laying on this bed with a ventilator and all these things going on. She was only at University of Maryland for about a day, but it seemed like about a week that she was there, really, because, you know, my mind was going a million miles an hour. And Pastor Carl came and sat with me a little bit. I need to speak up. Can you guys hear me okay? No? You can't?
Yeah.
Is this better now? Okay. So, sitting there at University of Maryland, I was looking at her, and the doctors were saying, you know, you guys need to transfer her to Johns Hopkins, and she has to go on a machine called ECMO. And if you don't transfer her, she's not going to make it. And that was one of the hardest things I think I've ever had to hear, and it broke me. And I remember looking at my little girl and thinking, how can she be taken from me? And this is one of the only times in my life I've ever heard God speak to me and my spirit. And he said, I know what it's like to lose a child. And I can hold you through this, and I can carry you through this. And if I can't, no one can. I know what you're going through, and it's going to be okay. And it was at that point that I said, God, you're absolutely right. She's yours. She was always yours. And I'm just praying that you will glorify yourself through her little body and through her life, and show these doctors and these people your glory and your power, because she's yours. So that was the very first night, and then we had to get in the car and transfer over to Johns Hopkins, and Lisa wanted to tell you a little bit about that.
What Vince didn't know that day, because I hadn't told him, is that in the final weeks of my pregnancy, when we approached my first due date, and I was still pregnant, and then a week went by and all that, I was very ready to not be pregnant anymore. Even my body was ready. Things had started progressing. But for some reason, the baby was not coming. And so I remember coming out of my midwife's office and just saying, okay, God, you know, I'm really ready. I'm ready to not be pregnant. And this was about a week and a half before she was born, where he just kept telling me, do you know that she's mine? And I thought, well, of course I know she's yours. All my children are yours. They're all a gift from you. I get it. And then as each day went on, I kept hearing it again. Do you know that she's mine? So I felt like I was being prepared for loss. And I'm not a paranoid person, so I didn't share it with Vince, and I didn't tell anyone else because I just kept thinking, like, okay, I'm not this crazy person. But so when everything started happening the day of her birth, it didn't catch me by surprise. I was kind of beside myself because it almost seemed like a nightmare become real. But as soon as that reality set in, I knew I needed to share that with Vince just to let him know that, you know, God's been kind of preparing me for this. And I will share with you, I'm going to read from my journal, so it was written to Miranda, so I'm going to still say mommy and daddy. But not everyone knows, but we had We don't normally pick the names for our children until well after they're born. Some may remember that Nate was not always Nate. But Miranda's name we did have picked out before her birth. She's one of only three of our children that were named before their birth, but we did not have a middle name. It was something that we struggled with. Sorry, I'm just trying to find the right spot. They transported her with the Johns Hopkins transport team through ambulance, but Vince and I had to ride in the car by ourselves. So as she was getting ready for transport, the chaplain from UMMC walked us out to our car. And I knew that kind of wasn't a good thing because they were probably trying to make sure that we actually made it out to the car. It really kind of drove home the point that we were in a very critical moment. So I'm just going to read to you. I said, the chaplain from UMMC walked us out of the hospital. When we got to the car, we cried and we prayed. On the way to Hopkins, I told Daddy that I thought your middle name should either be Glory or Gloria, because we both knew that no matter how long or short your life was destined to be, that the God that created you had ordained your days to bring him glory. When we got to Johns Hopkins, we were sent to the PICU waiting area. We were numb. So much waiting and hurrying at the same time. We saw them wheel you in, and it was very solemn. They brought us to a small conference room to tell us of the risks of putting you on ECMO and asked if we wanted to go forward. We signed the papers to place you on ECMO for life support. We knew that if God decided to take you, that we would have to let you go. But until he closed the doors, we would have to keep moving forward in faith. After a while longer, the doctor came back in to tell us that you were on ECMO, but that during that, your heart had stopped during the surgery to place you on. They brought us in to see you. It was overwhelming. You were so little and attached to several different machines, but for now you were alive. The doctors had told us they found swelling on your brain in the CT scan they did before placing you on. They said there was no way to know the extent of your brain injuries. That didn't matter. For now, you were alive. And that was Friday evening. It was less than 24 hours after her birth that we were going through all that. We were Vince's dad and stepmom came in that day, and my mom had met us up at the hospital also. And it just was, it's so outside of our normal. We birth at home, and we're just surrounded by family and those friends that we want near, and here we were in the hospital placing our daughter on life support. It's still very surreal to me. But Vince's dad and stepmom stayed at the hospital for us that first night since it had been 24 hours or more since we'd even seen our house. So we went home and slept that night, and then the next day my mom went up to the hospital. And we had gotten a call from Vince's dad that said she made it through the night, which was more than I was expecting. And I stayed home a little bit while I kind of recovered for a few hours after giving birth. And Vince went back up to the hospital. And then that afternoon, a friend drove me back up as well. And I'm going to read you the next portion. By late afternoon, I was ready to come back up to see you and ready for my first night at the hospital, the start of our new routine. Aunt Gina came down to meet you, too. She's in school to be a nurse and couldn't stand not being there. Seeing you all hooked up to the machines was hard for her. She was hearing all the worst-case scenarios from the doctors, and that was hard, too. But all of that gave me opportunity to tell her about how Daddy and I were trusting God, who already has your days here on earth in his book of life, and how we had already dedicated your life to him. I had also told your grandma, my mom, the same thing. It was the beginning of many times Daddy and I would share our faith and belief in God's perfect will for each and every one of our lives. God has been giving us an indescribable peace through this. We hate that you're here in the hospital, but we know that this was not some big mistake. God was not surprised at your arrival. He had set your days and how they would proceed at the foundation of time. This has always been his plan. And we know his will for us is, for this is to show his glory. We just want to follow in submission to his will.
So God has been working all throughout this thing. And we're just beginning to realize just how much he's been working through us and preparing us and putting us in right situations. They have chaplains at the hospitals that will come and visit you when and sit with you when you're going through a crisis like this. And the chaplain at Johns Hopkins, his name is Dave, and he will come and sit with us and pray with us. And over time, we got to know him, you know, fairly well. We'd see him every other day or every day, whatever. And I remember one time he said, you know, I may not show it, but you guys are really an encouragement to me, just seeing you live out your faith and how you're relying on God through all this. And it kind of struck me. I was like, here's a man who sees this kind of thing day in and day out, you know, week after week. That's what he sees. And for him to take notice and be encouraged of our faith, I think was saying a lot. And I can't take credit for that. I can only thank God for the faith that he gave to me. Tuesday evening, the first week that she was there, the elders and deacons came to pray with us and to meet her and pray over her. And I remember explaining all the medical stuff that was going on with Miranda and walking the guys back down the hallway to go see her. And as we got close, there was kind of a big commotion in the room. And what had happened is the machine that she was on got an air bubble in it, which is not a good thing to have an air bubble in your bloodstream. And so there was a little bit of a panic and commotion going on, so we had to turn our parade around and go back out to the waiting room. And so the elders and the deacons huddled up out there and were praying. And I went back to be with Lisa and Miranda. Issue was averted, and everything calmed down, you know, fairly quickly. And I went back out to be with the guys and to tell them it was okay to come back again. And they were still huddled up praying, and so I was praying with them too. And as we were praying, I felt a hand on my back, and I look over, and it was some old saint who asked me, do you mind if I pray with you too? I said, well, sure. So she did. She said this really sweet and great prayer. Never seen her before in my life. Don't know her name. But she stopped to pray with us. And afterwards, you know, the elders said, well, who's that? Maybe they thought that perhaps I made a friend or two while I was there, which I did, but not that particular friend. And I said, I have no idea. So I went and I sat next to her, and I thanked her for praying with us, and I asked her, you know, what was going on. She said, well, I think she said she was 80-something years old, and she said, I've been with the Lord since I was 12 years old, and I heard your brother on the phone. John had got on his phone and called the elders' wives, called his wife, to let them know what was going on because they were also praying for us while we were there. And she overheard that conversation, that telephone conversation, and she said, I just felt the Lord speaking to me that that I needed to pray with you. And I wasn't sure, and I was going to, and then I wasn't going to. And then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to listen to God and go ahead and pray with you. So I did. I said, well, I'm glad that you did. Later on that week, they came to our church. I came to find out that they're from this area, and they had come up to the church to ask our names and Miranda's name so that they could take that back to their church so they could pray for us and for her too. And that's God working through Miranda's life to touch one other person's life, to touch an entire other congregation that I don't even know and I'll probably never meet. But that that is another example of how God was using little Miranda's life, as small and fragile as it was, to touch so many other lives. You want to talk about our family meeting coming up to that?
Okay. The first week and a half in the hospital were critically stable. She was obviously in critical condition, needing life support, but there was stability there in that there were no major episodes except for changing out a pump, the ECMO machine, because the pump stopped and there was a bubble in the machine one day. And the first week and a half was a dance of medication and trying to find the right dosage for her. And each Friday they would want to get together with us and have a family meeting. I hate family meetings. They were never good. It was not new information, but they sat across the table from us and just kind of laid out all the things that hadn't gone right during the week. And so we had two of those. The first one was okay. It was just, you know, okay, this week we did this, and you know, next week we're just going to try and a little bit more with the medication. The second family meeting was not fun at all. It was, we've been here almost 2 weeks, and nothing is working. The medications that normally work are not working. She's not responding. We're going to give it one more week, and then we're going to need to sit down and talk again about withdrawing support. And we had one of the attendings tell us, maybe you should spend some more time with your other children. And to us, we was like, you know, I appreciate that. I understand what you're saying, but we're very blessed in that our children are being taken care of very well, and that we have this opportunity to be here. And it became really important for us to show our children that it didn't matter who was in the bed in the hospital. Mommy and Daddy were going to be by their side, whether it was someone who was 2 weeks old or 10 years old. We're their parents, and we're going to be wherever we need to be. When we came out of that family meeting that Friday, I was, of course, distressed, because even though it was not new information, it was nothing that I didn't know. I knew from day one that we were not promised another day with her. But anytime it's all kind of given to you at once, it's kind of hard to take in. And so Vince was saying that there was someone that he had met earlier in the day that he wanted me to have a chance to meet, too.
I met this guy in the waiting room. I affectionately called these things my park bench. That's where the dads got to sleep. The moms had a suite downstairs that had a masseuse, and, well, there wasn't a masseuse or anything. But they did get beds to sleep in. But the dads had to kind of sack out on, you know, whatever horizontal surface that they could find. And so I was sitting on a three-seat bench, and there's another man in the waiting room who was trying to get comfortable on a two-seat bench, and he's a little bit taller than me, so that wasn't working well. So I said, we can trade, because I was just sitting, and so we traded, and he started laying down, and he got a phone call a few moments later that interrupted his nap, and he got done with his phone call, and then he put his phone away, and he sat up, and he looked at me, and I was just sitting there, minding my own business. And he said, are you a fellow believer? What the heck was I doing that caused you to think that I was a fellow believer? And I said, yes. So he came and sat down next to me and shared a story of his daughter, which is just an incredible story of God's providence and strength for his family. And it was real encouragement to me, and I realized that that was one of those divine appointments, because I wasn't doing anything that would indicate I was a Christian or not a Christian or anything. And that was God showing up and giving me the encouragement that I needed, because that was when the doctors were becoming pessimistic, not just not really optimistic, but they're becoming a little bit pessimistic about Miranda's chances. And I knew that God was encouraging me at just the moments that I needed it. So that was kind of a neat thing to be wrapped in his love at that time. 1 minute, buddy. Lisa's going to talk about that Wednesday. Miranda had a very bad day, and she kind of went downhill pretty far. And Lisa's going to tell you guys a little bit about that and how God worked through it. So, we're going to pass this guy off.
Tag team. We've gotten quite used to that. Many of you probably remember getting a cautiously optimistic email from Carl. It was our third week in the hospital, about some events that had a turnaround with no explanation. We, of course, knew what the explanation was, but to watch it all being orchestrated was really kind of neat. So I'm gonna, I'm a journaler, and so lots of things that have already been put on my blog and things like that. So I'm reading snippets of that so that I don't miss any points. When I had come home on that Thursday, I have to go forward to be in order to go back. I came home on the Thursday, and I put a big update on my Facebook status. And I said, yesterday was an awful day. In the afternoon, after a long day of low pressures that weren't responding to any interventions, finding she had an infection and believing her to be succumbing to sepsis, Miranda's attending doctor came to me to ask when Vince would be back up at the hospital and if we had family in the area that would need to come in because we needed to have a discussion about terminating support. I was broken. That was the one choice I had prayed from her first day that I would not have to make. All night I prayed that God would make our next steps clear and that he would give us peace if it was our last day with her. In the next few hours, there was a change. I noticed she wasn't quite as red as she had been all day. Her blood pressure was steadily coming up, and her sats, or saturation levels, looked good. The night shift fellow, who in the past few days had been pretty grim, said she was comfortable with how things looked, and it seemed to be a change from the afternoon. So I went to go rest in the mother's room, that luxurious suite that Vince talked about. This morning when I woke up and headed back into the PICU, her fellow was the first person I saw. She said, we had a great night. It was really good. When I got into Miranda's room, all the nurses looked at me and said, this is like a different kid. Like everyone had these big smiles on, which normally when you walk into the room in the PICU, you don't see smiles. So I went over and looked at her, and she was a nice pink color again. She wasn't that glaring red that showed obvious infection. All the numbers on her little monitor that over the weeks we learned how to read, they all looked really good. And then her attending walked in, the same one who asked me when Vince would be up. And he came in with a smile on his face. And from the day we met him, there was never a smile on his face. And he said, I know you've said that you're receiving a lot of support from your church family and that people are praying, but I'm not sure what kind of strings you all are pulling. This is not what I expected to see this morning. I thought she would die last night. This is a remarkable change from where we were yesterday. We need to talk about getting an echocardiogram. We may be approaching the window to get her off of ECMO. I never thought I would hear those words. But, this afternoon, she did get her echocardiogram. The pulmonary pressure is still about two-thirds of her systemic pressure, and they need that to be 50% or lower in order to sustain off the ECMO. She was clamped off ECMO support for about 8 to 10 minutes. In the last few minutes, she began to drop her saturation levels, and the ECMO team felt that it was safer to bring her back online than to keep pushing her. When they brought her back onto the circuit, they kept it only at 30% cardiac supports, and her sats recovered immediately. That was much lower than she'd been in the past week. At one point yesterday, she was on 100% support. I am amazed at what God accomplished in less than 24 hours. After seeing this change, the doctors feel comfortable giving her more time to recover and has put off our family meeting for a little while longer. We are far from out of a critical situation because she still isn't able to support herself off ECMO, but we're seeing tiny steps in the right direction. praising God for a great day today and praying for his grace and mercy to walk through tomorrow, although we don't know what it holds. Please keep praying. God is not done using our little girl for his glory. We are humbled to be a witness to his mighty hand. So I had posted that on my Facebook, and a friend that I knew very casually through the MOPS group I was a part of, she had posted on her Facebook status for her friends to please pray for our daughter. And one of her friends had asked some questions about what was going on. I later found out that she's a labor and delivery nurse, so she was really interested in the details. And so I went back and forth giving, you know, as much detail as I could. And that person also asked that I would add her to my friend list so that she could keep up with what was going on. And so I did, and I told her to go ahead and read that status that I had just read to you all. So the next, I didn't hear back from her after that, but the next day I got a message from the mutual friend that we had, and she said, "Lisa, I know you have an overwhelming amount of things on your mind right now, so I won't be very long. I just wanted to let you know how much your words ministered to my best friend last night. She is not a believer and was very humbled by your testimony and strength. I have been witnessing to her for almost 15 years, and never has anything sparked her interest in God the way you did last night. Just wanted to let you know that this is just one example of his glory working through you and Miranda. My family and I continue to pray for complete healing of Miranda, strength for you and Vince, and peace for the other kids." So it was really a gift of grace to watch that even in the midst of the storm, we were given little glimpses of what was going on, and we know that this is just a fraction because he doesn't reveal everything to us. Of course, a week later, we would be called to make that final decision that we were all regretting. And when Vince and I were talking about that, because it had only been a week, Vince said, "But why? Why were we given that turnaround, that unexplained turnaround that looked like everything was going in the right direction, just for a week later to be making that decision that we didn't want to?" And it took me a few weeks out to really piece that together. But the two doctors that were assigned to her the night of the turnaround were the same two doctors that had admitted her on the first night, the same two doctors that had always been pessimistic from the start. And it was just a reminder for us, and I think a testimony to them, that when everything that they were doing was failing, there was still ability of change, because we were not worshiping them, we were worshiping God. And so, if nothing else, I think it was just to let them see that their power wasn't the only power. And each day that we had there, we were introduced to more people. We had met Bob and Lori. We also met another couple that had a baby in the bed next to Miranda, who was almost on ECMO, but they were able to keep him off. And so if she had gone the week before, we might not have met them. And each family that we met through being in the PICU for just one more day.
We've been called a lot of things in our lives. One of the funniest, I think, was a story that Patrick told me. He came to sit with me. Patrick came to sit with me on Tuesday, on the 25th of October, and he ended up staying all night with me. And about 4 in the morning, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to go find a park bench to lay down on, and so I did. And Patrick stayed in the room with Miranda, and he was just sitting there. He had opened his Bible and was reading, and one of the hospital staff came in. I don't know who it was. He didn't know who it was, but evidently it was somebody who was familiar with us and with our story. And so this person asked Patrick, he goes, "You know anything about this couple? They're weird." And Patrick said, "Yes." Thank you, Patrick. And the person went on to say that they're weird because, you know, I see a lot of families come through here, and it's almost as if they're happy to be here. Not that they're happy necessarily that they're here, but they have this joy kind of about them, and they're smiling, and they're able to, they're just weird. And Patrick was able to share with him, he said, you know why they're weird? They have joy because they know that Jesus is carrying their little girl. They have peace because they've put their faith in Christ, not in the doctors necessarily. And Patrick was able to share the gospel with this person, I don't know who it was, through our weirdness. How great is that? That was on Tuesday. So Wednesday morning, well, that was actually very early Wednesday morning, but that was over Tuesday night that happened. Patrick went home in the morning on Wednesday, and that day would be the day that the doctors told me, this is it, there's nothing more that we can do. We need to take her off of support and let her go. So it was one of the last things that Christ would do through Miranda was to be able to touch that hospital worker who is unnamed. I don't know who it was. But even up to the very end, God was with us and working through us to touch people's lives. I want Lisa to talk about the last day with her. Something you all should know is that when Miranda was born, I helped to deliver her, and so I got to hold her. And I got to hold her in the ambulance on the way to Carroll County Hospital and hand her over to the doctors once I got there. And that would be the last time that I held her. Lisa never got to hold her after she was born. And Lisa's going to talk to you about the last day and the last couple hours that we got to spend with her.
I mentioned to you that I felt that God had been ministering to my heart in the weeks or the week and a half leading up to her birth. Once we got to the hospital and realized everything that had meant, I continued to pray for healing and for a miracle to be done. And every time I would pray, where I was once hearing, do you know that she's mine, I was now hearing, will you take her however I give her to you? So, of course. And each day that I would hear that, I would struggle with, okay, well, what exactly does that mean? You know, of course, the doctors have told us there's swelling on the brain injury. They didn't know if that would mean seizures or what it would mean. They couldn't say. And so, again, I would pray for a miracle, and again, I would hear, will you take her how I give her to you? I said, sure. And we just kept walking day after day until that last day when Vince called me up to the hospital on Wednesday to let me know that the doctor said that this was it. She was having increased complications, and the risks of staying on any longer greatly outweighed any chance of recovery. And so the doctors began to talk to us about how we would want that final day to go, and they gave us a lot of freedom in what we would do about bringing the children up, because none of our children are of the age where they would really be allowed into the PICU, so they had not seen her since the night of her birth. And it was important for us that they would get a chance to say goodbye to her since they had welcomed her to the world. And so the doctors and the child life specialists and social worker kind of worked with us to orchestrate how that day would go. And one of the requests that I had made was that I hold my daughter. And one of the ECMO required two tubes to be surgically inserted into her neck and attached to her heart. And while she was on that machine, I could not hold her, couldn't move much of her. We held her hands, we touched her head. But it was really important that I hold my daughter. And they told me that they could clamp it off and they could cut it, and one of the ECMO techs could put a blanket around the tubes and all that could be done. And I said, I really want the tubes removed. I said, is there any chance of doing that? Because for me it was important not just that my hands be under her, but that I hold her close and that I would get to kiss her just as I had held all my other children close. So the doctors talked to the surgical team, and lined them up for a time in the evening, which gave us the morning at home. My sister had come into town, and my parents came in on Wednesday, so they spent the overnight at the hospital so Vince and I could be together in the morning to let our children know what Thursday was going to hold, because they needed to hear that from both of us, and we needed to kind of be together as a family to walk through that. And we made our way back up to the hospital. And I had been praying all along because I knew that there was risks involved with the surgery to remove the cannulas or the tubes, because I knew her heart stopped getting placed on ECMO, so there was no reason to believe that she would survive the surgery to come off of it. And so as I continued to pray, and he continued to say, "Will you take her as I give her to you?" I thought, oh, now I get it. I might not ever hold my daughter alive. And so they gave me another chance. They said, you know, we'll let you hold her while she's still on ECMO. We'll, you know, we can do it very carefully. We'll place her in your lap. And I thought of that and I said, yeah, I understand that. I said, but you know what? I want her to have the surgery to come off ECMO and to be the cannulas removed. I want to hold my daughter the way I gave her to you. And so after we had lots of hours where the grandparents all came in, all six of them, and got to see her, and we were blessed with Kim Green is a photographer, and she had gotten home with her husband from Mozambique the night before, and she was there with us Thursday to take pictures of that last day. Those of you that have seen the slideshow, that was all, that was a gift from Kim for us to be able to capture that. Those are some of the very few photos that we have of her. And then once the children had gotten to see Miranda and to say goodbye, the surgical team came in and they began the surgery to remove ECMO and then to remove the cannulas. And they told us that we would be waiting out in the hallway because it had to be a sterile field, and that if she were to crash during the surgery, that they would call us in immediately. And so there was a lot of hustle and bustle as we waited out in the hallway, and Carl was there with us, and MJ, who is the doctor who, over the course of the weeks, we'd kind of gotten a little bond with, which I wouldn't have expected from the start. She's a little different than me. And so she was with us, and she just kind of gave us the play-by-play. Well, we kind of figured out that she wasn't really on that day. That was her day off, and she had chosen to be there with us. She had asked us the night before if we would mind if she was there, and if she could come in when Miranda was off ECMO, too. And so we saw the ECMO machine be wheeled out, and we realized that part was over, and then the surgical team did what they did, and then they called us in. They had been preparing her for me, and when we walked into the room, she very much was still alive. Her heart was still beating pretty strongly, and the respiratory therapist was still giving her oxygen through the bag, and I held my daughter for, I think, over an hour. Much of it, she was still very much alive, which was a gift because I had given that over to God, and I'd said I knew it didn't matter whether she was alive or not. I just was getting to hold her for those final moments. And so the grace that he gave and his mercy to give me that hour where I could comfort her through that point was a pretty special gift. And the team had moved us. The whole time we were at Johns Hopkins, for those of you that hadn't been up there, we were part of the PICU suite where there's four beds in a big room. For that final day, they worked some magic and moved us into a private room so that we really had those final hours as a family. And even though we were still surrounded by all of the technology, it was a chance to just be together and to see our little girl off. We're still kind of on the, you know, step down from all that because it's still not, it's real, but it's still not haven't quite processed all of it because it's huge. But that's where we were. We said goodbye, and Carl drove us home to meet up with the rest of our family that had been waiting for us. A lot of people since then have come up and said, we were really praying. I said, yeah, we were all really praying. And they're like, but we really thought that she would live because there are thousands of people praying. I said, I realize that. And, the whole time, we had prayed for healing and we had prayed for a miracle. And I think in our human minds, we expected that that meant that her body would be healed and that the miracle would be that we would take her home. And no one ever really understood that really the miracle was her going home to him and that the healing was in relationships. Chances that we might not have had we not seen past ourselves and given her over to God and just allowed the whole situation to work the way he would want. And so I kept trying to tell people, this wasn't plan B. God didn't look down the night she was born and go, wait a minute, this is not what I meant to happen. He had been ready for it, just we weren't. And Vince will tell you one of the big things that we got to see after the fact.
I hope you guys have seen through our testimony what we've shared with you, what we intended to be briefly, but I'm realizing wasn't that brief. I'm sorry. What I hope that you guys have seen is that God was with us every single step of the way. And that when he says, I will never leave you or forsake you, we can believe it absolutely. To kind of bring you all full circle, in August, I quit the job that I was at and started at a new company, which is a very, very small company. I had to go out and get private insurance. Because I was getting private insurance, Lisa was denied insurance because she had a pre-existing condition of pregnancy. And we said, oh, great, this is horrible. It's going to cost us a lot because now we have to go into COBRA, and it's going to be very, very expensive to insure her and all these things. But in the course of that, somebody said, why don't you look into the Maryland Healthcare Fund? And so we did, and we came to find out that since she was denied coverage, she was indeed eligible for that. And they weren't looking at my income because I wasn't applying for that insurance. They were only looking at her income, and she's a stay-at-home mom. And although she deserves a huge income, she doesn't get one. And so we are eligible for the Maryland Maryland State Healthcare, which means that our copay, our deductible, whatever else, is zero. And I don't know if any of you guys have kind of thought about that, what the medical costs are to be on life support for a month in a hospital, but I can tell you it's hundreds of thousands of dollars that God provided for before we even knew that we needed it. I don't want to stand up here and praise God for money that he's giving to us because that's not how I think that he blesses us. He blesses us in a lot of ways, but that was another way that he worked in our lives before we even knew it. I just wanted to end by sharing with you guys a couple more things, and then we'll get off the stage and give it back to Carl. But a lot of you, and a lot of people have said what an inspiration we are, and what an encouragement we've been, and we really appreciate that, and we're humbled by those sentiments and those words, and we really appreciate that. But I want you to know, Lisa's special to me, but she's not that special. I'm certainly not special. It's not us. It's nothing that we did. If you guys have a Bible, would you look at this with me? It's Hebrews chapter 12, verses 2 and 3. I'm sure some of you probably have this one memorized already. Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 2, says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." It was because we fixed our eyes on Jesus that we could consider him that we did not grow weary or lose heart. This verse meant a lot to me, and it really spoke to me through the entire month that I was sitting with Miranda. Jesus is the author of our faith. He invented it. He gave us that faith. All we did was hold on to it and grab hold of it and make that choice. He's also the perfecter of our faith, is what this verse says. And through these trials, he perfects our faith. Anybody can do the same thing. I think in the moments of crisis, we have the choice to either reject God, reject Jesus, try and work through whatever crisis on our own strength and our own capacity, wallow in misery, and just ask why and beat ourselves up over it. Or we can choose to have joy because of the finished work of Jesus Christ. And I know that if he's holding her, then what do I have to be afraid of? So that's the strength that we drew upon. We're not special. I don't want to be on a pedestal because I'll fall and break. But Christ can. Christ can be on that pedestal for us all. And that's all I wanted to leave you guys with. Thank you all. All right, I'm done, Carl.
You certainly are.